and wind gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. Coming up in just a few minutes on KMXT News in the Midday Report, we've got an update from Alaska's Pacific Spaceport Complex here on Kodiak Island and their upcoming launch. A ruling from the Alaska Supreme Court on law enforcement not being able to use binoculars or telephoto lenses when flying over Alaskans' property. A recap of the Alaska Board of Fisheries meeting at the Upper Cook Inlet Finfish meeting last week. Some news from the legislature and, of course, the latest from the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race as mushers are currently on the Norton Sound coast making their way to the finish in Nome. Well, I'll have all that and more coming up in just a few minutes right after NPR. Thanks for listening to KMXT.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Biden has unveiled a new federal budget proposal that calls for tax increases on billionaires and large corporations. But as NPR's Franco Ordonez tells us, the $7.3 trillion budget proposal is one part wish list and another part political statement.
The White House budget director says the president's budget would also cut taxes for millions of low and middle income families and bring down the costs on prescription drugs and utility bills. Speaking to the National League of Cities, President Biden said his plans would raise billions more to help cut the deficit and provide child care.
Folks, look, I'm a capitalist. If you can make $1 billion, wonderful. Just pay your fair share, man. Not 8.2%.
These budget proposals are largely political exercises, since Congress controls the government's purse strings. But it does reveal Biden's policy priorities that he'll take on the road as he gears up for his reelection campaign. Franco Ordonez, NPR News.
Facing several more nominating contests tomorrow, President Biden and former President Donald Trump are on track to getting enough delegates to secure their respective parties' presidential nomination. Trump spoke this morning to CNBC. He said he believed TikTok is a national security threat, but opposes a proposed ban now before Congress.
I do believe it, and we have to very much go into privacy and make sure that we are protecting the American people's privacy and data rights. And I agree, but, you know, we also have that problem with other. You have that problem with Facebook and lots of other companies, too.
President Biden endorsed legislation that could lead to a ban of the popular video sharing app based on concerns about China's access to Americans' personal information. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he intends to press on with a military offensive in Rafah over the objections of world leaders who warn that doing so would be catastrophic for civilians. Roughly 1.5 million displaced Palestinians are taking refuge in the city on the southern Gaza Strip. NPR's Daniel Estrin reports on what's blocked efforts to halt fighting as many Palestinian civilians under siege observe the Muslim holy month of Ramadan.
President Biden and so many countries have been hoping for a ceasefire deal, at least a temporary one, for at least 6 weeks around the start of Ramadan. And the U.S. had been hoping that that kind of temporary pause in fighting could be extended. And yet, you know, these talks are stalled. And they really are all stalled because of one main issue, which is the nature of the ceasefire. Hamas is demanding a full cessation of the war. Israel is not prepared to entertain that.
That's NPR's Daniel Estrin reporting. Officials in Saudi Arabia declared the beginning of the fasting month after the crescent moon appeared Sunday night. For those who observe Ramadan, it is a period of religious reflection. From Washington, this is NPR News. The Secretary of the Housing and Urban Development, Marcia Fudge, says she plans to depart later this month. Fudge is only the second black woman to lead HUD. The Congressional Black Caucus credits a Democrat, a former member of Congress, with taking significant steps to root out racial bias in the home appraisal process. And she guided the housing agency through the height of the COVID pandemic, during which millions of people who lost their incomes were at risk of falling behind on their rent or mortgage payments. News of Fudge's resignation comes 4 years to the day, by the way, that the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus outbreak a pandemic. A new study finds people who do weight training a few days a week live longer. NPR's Allison Aubrey reports a longevity boost is tied to five key ways strength training is beneficial to good health.
The study included data from about 400,000 adults in the U.S. Everyone who did strength training about 2 to 3 times a week benefited. But study author Martha Gulati, a preventive cardiologist, says the data show women need less exercise than men to get the same gains in longevity.
Women who do muscle strengthening activity had a reduction in their cardiovascular mortality by 30%.
Resistance training includes all activities that require us to use our muscles to resist weight or force. That's everything from weightlifting to using our own body weight, as with push-ups or squats. The science shows resistance training is also good for mood, metabolic health by helping to control blood sugar. It also helps protect bones and joints.
That's NPR's Allison Aubrey. It's NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Wallace Foundation, working to develop and share practices that can improve learning and enrichment for young people and the vitality of the arts for everyone. Ideas and information at wallacefoundation.org.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Davis Hovey, filling in for Terry Haynes. Alaska's Pacific Spaceport Complex is gearing up for its next launch at its site on Kodiak Island. Island residents saw access to a local beach closed for several days over the last week as various testing was underway. Robert Green is the president of Aurora Launch Services, which operates out of the spaceport on Kodiak's Narrow Cape. According to Green, the commercial customer is performing various hazardous operations testing before scheduling a launch date. ALS and the spaceport are required to issue a 30-day notice to the public and impacted parties in the air and sea before a launch can happen. That means the next rocket launch from Kodiak Spaceport is still more than a month away. In the meantime, the unnamed customer has been doing several days' worth of testing on their vehicle at the launch pad, which required the road to Fossil Beach to be closed. Green says for safety reasons, the road was closed from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. for a period of 5 days last week, as fuel and other chemicals were loaded onto the spacebound vehicle on site. Green did not identify who the customer is, but said it is a commercial company, not a government entity. The last time a launch occurred at the spaceport was in January of 2023, which resulted in ABL Space Systems rocket crashing on the launch pad. More information about the upcoming launch will be released in the coming days and can be found online at akaerospace.com. Law enforcement officials can't use binoculars or telephoto lenses when flying over Alaskans' property unless they have a warrant. That's according to a ruling by the Alaska Supreme Court on Friday. The case involved a Fairbanks man who was arrested after troopers photographed his yard from the air. KUAC's Robin has the report.
The case starts in 2012, when troopers got a tip that John William McKelvey was then illegally growing marijuana on his property. After flying over the property and taking pictures with a telephoto lens, the troopers obtained a search warrant. The validity of that search warrant is central to the case, but more so whether the troopers' use of aerial photography violates either the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution or the Alaska Constitution's right to privacy clause.
It should have a significant impact on law enforcement just roaming around looking at people's properties without a reason. It's going to require that they first present to a judge the evidence they have to go out there and obtain a warrant.
That's Robert John, the Fairbanks attorney who argued the case for McKelvey. He was reached at his law office on Friday. The case was featured on the Supreme Court Live demonstration at a public assembly at Lathrop High School in November 2022. The Supreme Court has heard cases in front of high school students 15 times since 2010. Justice Dario Borgeson wrote the main decision for the court, saying Alaskans have a reasonable expectation that authorities will not examine their homes from aircraft with high-powered optics. The opinion focused on using technology, but John says there was more.
The opinion leaves open the question of whether flying over people's property and trying to look at things with your naked eye is a violation of the Constitution as well.
Two justices, Chief Justice Peter Mawson and Justice Susan Carney, concurred with Borgeson, but wrote a separate decision, saying the court should have gone further and that warrants should be required for any kind of looking from above. John says that likely includes drones.
It's actually kind of paving the way with protections right now before we get to the point that you'd have to make a decision about drones. It's basically said, we are not going to make our rights subservient to technology. Our rights prevail.
The Alaska Beacon reported that Department of Public Safety Communications Director Austin McDaniel wrote in an email message that the department doesn't believe the ruling will impact its operations. Quote, DPS has had a small drone program in place for nearly 5 years, and since day one, we have operated under the same confines as the Supreme Court ruling outlined. The ruling states the Alaska Constitution requires law enforcement to get a warrant before taking pictures of private property from the sky. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
In other news, the Alaska Board of Fisheries concluded its Upper Cook Inlet finfish meeting last week after hearing days of public testimony and voting on hundreds of proposals. Among the most significant was a tight vote in a plan for late-run king salmon management, which, as KDLL's Riley Board reports, will lower the goal for escapement, possibly creating opportunities for one commercial sockeye fishery.
Anchorage member Merritt Carlson Van Dort kicked off Friday's meeting by proposing a recovery plan that would keep the escapement goal for large king salmon at 15,000 to 30,000. Large king salmon are those over 34 inches. Carlson Van Dort told the board the motivation for her plan was to recover king salmon to sustainable levels.
And sustained yield means to me that we will provide the stewardship needed to keep replenishable resources available at the highest possible level. And that is rooted in Alaska's Constitution, Article 8.
She said that department presentations and public comments indicated a low escapement goal is not enough to help the species recover. And she said her plan distributes limitations across every user group.
It provides restrictions to the in-river sport fishermen, the set gillnet fishermen, the drift gillnet fishermen, and personal use fishermen, personal use Alaskans, until that recovery goal is achieved.
Regulators manage sockeye fishing with kings in mind, because the latter, a species of concern, can be accidentally killed as bycatch. The Eastside setnet fishery was closed before the season even began last year because of a low king forecast. Carlson Van Dort's plan would have allowed a setnet opening if the preseason forecast for large kings is over 15,000, but not require one.
In my language, it allows the department some latitude. It is not a shall, it is a may.
Over the course of deliberations, the board worked from Carlson Van Dort's action plan, but made a major amendment to the king salmon escapement threshold. Eagle River board member Jared Godfrey first proposed lowering the goal from 15,000 to 13,500. Which failed, then proposed lowering that number to 14,250, which passed in a 4-3 vote. He said the goal was to more equally distribute the burden of conservation.
The restrictions on, in particular, the set netters that fish in this fishery, it is existential to the point where if and when the goals here historically and what the status quo has been achieved, whether it takes 2 years or 5 years from now, and they're not able to fish due to the non-targeted capture of king, many of those operations will cease to exist. And that, to me, is not an egalitarian approach by the board when distributing the pain equally.
Carlson Van Dort was one of the votes against. You can find the approved action plan, called RC-183, on the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's website. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
Many residents of both Juneau and Haines saw their property assessments jump in value last year. Now an Alaska Senate bill would require state accreditation for tax assessors and prevent municipalities from raising the assessed value of properties during an appeal process. KTOO reports Senator Jesse Keel, a Juneau Democrat, sponsored the bill. He says it aims to make the property assessment process in the state more fair and transparent for residents.
This is a bill that maintains the important principle of local control in local government, but sets some basic rules of the road and a little bit of balance for property owners who disagree with the tax assessor on what their property is worth.
The bill puts into place new standards for assessors in Alaska by requiring a Level 3 certification from the Alaska Association of Assessing Officers, or requiring that they work under the supervision of someone who does. but it would also allow municipalities to adopt their own standards instead if they prefer. The bill would also prevent assessors from raising the value of a property during an appeal process, and it changes the default for who hears tax appeals to an appointed Board of Equalization instead of the municipality's locally elected officials. Residents from Juneau and Haines gave public testimony on the bill earlier this month. Brenda Josephson, a Haines resident, says she applauds the bill and the guardrails it puts in place following what she says was a train wreck of an assessment process last year.
We had an uncertified contract assessor that was hired, and he enacted a new exotic hybrid mass appraisal valuation system. The result was assessments where some properties were assessed in excess of their full and true market value.
The Haines Borough faced a summer of intense public criticism following a dramatic rise in some property assessments and resulting tax bills. Many residents blame the borough's contract assessor, who they say did not have proper credentials for the position. However, the borough says the rise in property values is the result of a hot residential real estate market and corrections for out-of-date assessments. Though nearly all testifiers spoke in favor of the bill, some Juneau residents, like Howard Beery, requested Keel include an assessment limit in the bill to cap how much the assessed value of a property can increase from one year to the next.
What I notice in this bill, there's no limits. And my property tax went up over 40%. Yes, this bill has some positive things, but there is nothing in there that says that they can't raise it 40%.
In an interview, Senator Keel says that does not fit with the goal of the bill, and he does not want it to disrupt different municipalities' revenue structures across the state. Following public testimony, the bill was held in committee for further consideration. Keel says he feels good about the chances of the bill moving forward.
Support for KMXT comes from Alaska's most advanced network. GCI's resilient and redundant network is keeping schools connected across the state. Details at gci.com/education.
Front-running Iditarod Trail sled dog teams made it to Unalakleet and the western edge of Alaska midday yesterday in brilliant sunshine. Alaska Public Media reports musher Jesse Holmes arrived in first position but didn't hang on to the lead for long. Competitor Dallas Seavey, a five-time Iditarod champion, blew through the checkpoint while Holmes rested his team. It was just as Holmes had predicted.
He figures he's got to do something. Can't play my game. He's gonna knows that I'm a little less experienced, so he's gonna make me play his. And so the chess game begins with the chess master.
Tired and chilled the night before, and temperatures down to 45 below, the five mushers at the front of the Iditarod had stopped at Old Woman Cabin on the way from Caltag to Unalakleet. Holmes described the camaraderie there.
Oh, it was great. It was a good social atmosphere with the other mushers. Everybody was kind of cracking jokes and, you know, helping each other out, being friendly.
Holmes said Beals encouraged him to get moving after his alarm went off.
Sometimes I lack a little bit of cutthroatness, you know, for racing. And I was like, well, man, you know, I haven't slept in days. I'll just lay here for a bit. And he goes, I hear footsteps moving, and they sound sneaky. You need to get going. I was like, yep, I think you're right. I'm out of here.
That, of course, had been Dallas Seavey on the move. A few positions behind and fourth into Unalakleet, musher Matt Hall said he wasn't looking forward as much as behind him.
I'm just going to be tickled if we can hold the spot. The guys in front, you know, in a way, I'm either going to catch them or not based on if things go poorly for them. So I'm more concerned about what's behind me and would like to put some distance so I don't have to keep looking over my shoulder.
Still, Hall moved up to third position by leaving 10 minutes ahead of Travis Beals, who was fourth. Both of them headed toward Shaktulik behind Seavey and Holmes. At last check, the top five Iditarod teams were Dallas Seavey out of Koyuk, Jesse Holmes into Koyuk, Matt Hall into Koyuk, Travis Beals into Koyuk, and Paige Drobny out of Shaktulik. Two mushers dropped out after their dogs died. They are the first two dog deaths of this year's race. Race officials say Isaac Tieford's dog collapsed outside of New Lotto, and Hunter Keefe's dog collapsed outside of Caltag. Race rules say if a dog dies, a musher must voluntarily drop out of the race, or they will be withdrawn, unless the dog died to an unpreventable hazard, like a moose encounter. Three other mushers called it quits yesterday. The race said, quote, in the best interest of their teams, Aaron Altimus, Deke Nachtaborin, and Connor McMahon. That leaves 33 mushers still in the Iditarod. And finally, two dogs in the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race collapsed and died yesterday, according to race officials. Those are the first two dog deaths of the 2024 race. And a statement official said a two-year-old dog named Bog was on rookie musher Isaac Tiford's team. Bog collapsed just outside of the Nulato checkpoint, almost 600 miles into the 1,000-mile race. The other dog, a four-year-old named George, was on musher Hunter Keefe's team. Officials say George collapsed and died between Caltag and Unalakleet, just over 650 miles into the race. Iditarod veterinarian Stu Nelson says race officials want to determine the cause of any dog's death.
It's very unfortunate, and we try to learn everything we can for any future applications that would benefit our dog care protocols. But yeah, it's very, very sad. There's no way around it, you know.
This is Tiford's first Iditarod. He's from Utah, but currently lives in Talkeetna, where he runs dogs at five-time Iditarod champion Dallas Seavey's kennel. He's racing Seavey's B team this year. Keefe is racing in his second Iditarod with Ramey Reddington's dog team. Reddington's father helped found the Iditarod, and one of his sons, Ryan, won last year's race. Both Tiford and Keefe scratched from the Iditarod yesterday. Race rules say if a dog dies, a musher must voluntarily drop out of the race or they will be withdrawn unless the dog died due to an unpreventable hazard like a moose encounter. For KMXT News, I'm Davis Hovey. Have a good afternoon.
The U.S. wants stronger trade ties with Thailand and the Philippines. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo and 22 executives from American corporations are visiting both of those countries this week. This is an effort to diversify supply chains and counter China's influence. Saudi Arabia's oil company Aramco reported an annual profit of $120 billion in 2023. That's down from the previous year's record $160 billion. That was the year oil prices spiked after Russia launched a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican nominee for president, said today that he would continue relying on tariffs if he returned to the White House. Trump told CNBC he would seek to cut taxes to counter the higher prices tariffs would cause. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Here is your Island Messenger for Monday, March 11th. I'm your host, Davis, filling in for Terry Haynes. The sun rose today at 8:34 a.m. and will set at 8:06 p.m. That gives us a total of 11 hours and 31 minutes of daylight, again, 5 minutes since yesterday. Taking a look at the record high for this day, set in 1987, it was 49 degrees. The record low for this day was set in 1966 at 0 degrees. And for the weather currently in Kodiak at the airport, it is 24 degrees with overcast skies. Looking outside the window, the snow showers potentially have subsided here at KMXT Studios, but there is still a slight chance of precipitation going into tonight. Looks like mostly cloudy skies with a low around 21 for the rest of the evening. Northwest wind around 15 miles per hour with gusts as high as 20 miles per hour tonight. And the low is 21 degrees. Now we go to marine weather in Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. There's a small craft advisory in effect through tomorrow. Today, north wind at 25 knots. Seas 5 feet and freezing spray. Tonight, northwest wind at 25 knots. Seas 5 feet with freezing spray. In Chiniac Bay, today, northwest wind at 15 knots. Seas 2 feet, freezing spray. Tonight, northwest wind at 15 knots. Seas 2 feet, freezing spray. In Marmot Bay today, northwest wind at 15 knots. Seas 2 feet. Tonight, northwest wind at 15 knots. Seas 2 feet and freezing spray. And in the Shelikof Strait, there's a gale warning today. Heavy freezing spray warning today as well. Today, northwest wind at 35 knots. Seas 7 feet, heavy freezing spray. Tonight, northwest wind at 30 knots. Seas 5 feet with freezing spray. And if you're wondering about tides, the next high tide at Kodiak District is 3:37 this afternoon, and the next high tide at Larsen Bay, west side of the island, is 4:04 p.m. later today. Alrighty, I'm not seeing any personal messages, so we're going to go right into community announcements. Spring Forward has happened. If you missed it, yesterday was daylight savings time, so all of our clocks are now an hour ahead. Don't forget to reset those clocks as later sunrises are occurring, and that also means there's more light at night. Notice is hereby given for the next Kodiak Island Borough School District Board of Education regular meeting. That's tonight at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, F140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will also be streamed live through Teams. Meeting login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District website, www.kibsd.org. The meeting agenda and packet for the meeting can be viewed on Board Docs online. If you need more information, contact Lori Pardoe, Secretary to the Board of Education. Her number is 907-486-7566. Scuttlebutt, a galley tables workshop for youth, happens on Tuesdays from 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. The next one will be tomorrow at Kodiak Public Library Craft Room. This is a free weekly storytelling workshop for students in grades 9 through 12, where they practice building and sharing their stories with help from experienced storytellers. The Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District is hosting a community garden meeting. That's at the KFRC building Touch Tank on Near Island. That's this Thursday, March 14th, 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. in the main meeting room at 301 Research Court. Again, that's at the KFRC building Touch Tank on Near Island. They'll be going over bed prepping methods, seed starting, garden planning, work party, and cleanup planning. And they're hoping to grow the community together. Again, that's a community garden meeting this Thursday. Senior Citizens of Kodiak Island Cove Adult Day Program has been helping families to care for their elders for over 35 years. Adult Day services provide relief for the family, reduce isolation for the adult, and offers a fun and stimulating place to spend a few hours in a safe environment. Adults participate in activities to regain strengths, do memory work, and stay connected to what is happening in the community and the world. Have you considered Adult Day services for your mother, father, or spouse? For more information, call 907-486-2203. Again, that number, 907-486-2203. Or you can visit their website at www.kodiakseniorcenter.org. Speaking of senior citizens, the Senior Citizens of Kodiak Group is in need of paper bags. Please make sure they are not torn or soiled, and they can be dropped off at the Senior Citizen Center between the hours of 8:30 and 4:30, Monday through Friday. The Kodiak Harvest Food Cooperative annual meeting is coming up. They'll be holding their next annual meeting two Thursdays from now, March 28th, at the Kodiak Community College. There will be a vendor market from 5 to 6 p.m. that night, and the meeting will be conducted from 6 to 7. Light refreshments will be served. All are welcome, but you must be a Kodiak Harvest Food Cooperative member to vote in the Board of Directors election. Again, that's March 28th at the Kodiak Community College. Thanks so much for tuning in to Island Messenger for today. I'm your host, Davis, filling in for Terry Haynes. Have a great afternoon.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181. Fax us at 486-2733 or email psa@kmxt.org.